Go to Fish and Game with Alaska, December the 1st, they're going to take the fisheries then, and then I'll be back, and my grandkids will, just like it was in the 1950s.
Do you think, Bob, that we should, before we make this change, find out whether or not the law is as you say it is, or the law is as Mr. Seekins says it is?
Mr. Senator, you wasted 18 years.
Not I wasn't there.
You, Mr. Seekins, somebody wasted 18 years. You should have made that argument in 1980, 1982. You've run out of time. We only have another 7 months before December's first year. You should have made the argument before. I would strongly support a constitutional amendment that's amended to include this point. Anytime within 5 years after the passage of the constitutional amendment, if it passes, that a law prevails and proves that the Constitution of the United States was wrong in trying to make us overturn on, then our Constitution will become null and void. I agree with it. I'll pay money to support that. But you know what, sir? We don't have the luxury of that. We've wasted the time. We want to keep the feds out. We want to keep management of fish and game in Alaska, and you have until December 1st to do that.
Okay. Should we have allowed a vote of the people on the issue of sovereignty that was tried in the Venati case, too?
I don't know, sir.
Oh. If other questions of sovereignty over our fish and game, are available for a vote of the people, should we be able to have a vote of the people to decide whether or not Venati was a sovereign nation?
It'd be fun to maybe ask Dippin to do
in
that.
In fact, a whole bunch of people told us we were crazy, didn't they, that we couldn't bring that suit and that we were going to lose the suit. Odds were 1,000 to 1 we were going to lose that suit.
If you frame such a question, I'll be glad to ask Dave Dippin to send it out in his next statewide poll. We'll see the response he gets, but I don't think it'll be 95% like this one is.
Well, no, because you see, nobody's got a gun held to our head right now, and nobody would believe that was true, would they?
Can I touch a little bit on that?
Yeah.
I don't argue with you. I don't think I like the proposed task force plan. I haven't found anybody that has. I found nobody that said they liked it.
We couldn't, when we were taking testimony either, all over the state, find anybody that liked the governor's plan.
Let me just tell you something, Senator, and you know this better than anybody I know. Lobby is a part of being a compromise. We have an unusual situation here. First of all, December the 1st, state law as we've known it in Alaska is gone forever. It's not going to be that way anymore. It's either going to be the federal control and federal lands or some sort of, quote, in the compromise. And you know the interesting thing in this compromise? The other side's already blinked. There's already been, and I disagree with your earlier statement,
twice,
just a minute, there's already been a compromise struck that Senator Stevens hung on the tail end of the appropriation bill and was passed by the U.S. Congress. And if he hadn't done that, you and I wouldn't be here today, because the feds would be taking over management. All those amended chains on the ANILCA that takes the Fed control from being over here at 3 o'clock and brings it back closer to midnight to where we are today at 9 o'clock, we've already got a compromise, Senator, and the other side's already approved it, because the task force bill, as amended by Stevens and passed by the Congress, is a compromise from full federal control.
Okay. How many times, you mentioned amending the Constitution, how many times have we amended the Equal Protection Clause of our Constitution?
I don't know, sir.
We haven't. Never had to. People kind of thought things like equal protection and, not being allowed to discriminate among our citizens was kind of an important thing. So we haven't changed that one. Did you ever have to act in your capacity? You were a banker by your profession before you retired.
No, sir. I owed a lot of money to banks. I never was one of them. I was never on the other side of the table.
Did you ever act as a trustee?
No, sir. Yeah, different times, but not. Right.
Did you ever feel that when you were acting as a trustee that somehow you could make choices among which of the beneficiaries got things and which of the beneficiaries didn't?
I'm not qualified to answer that.
I mean, would you have even dawned on you to have somehow discriminated if you were a trustee on the rights or benefits of other beneficiaries?
If that were the case, I would have gone to court and brought litigation.
Well, you certainly would have sought some legal talent before you attempted to give all the money out of the trust to one beneficiary and denied money out of the trust to any other beneficiary, wouldn't you? I mean, I'm just trying to get to the analogy that Mr. Seekins has drawn. Because you see, some of us believe we are, in fact, the trustees of this property, that it was granted quitclaim deed by the federal government to the state of Alaska, just as the other 49 states currently have it, that we're not some unique federal territorial enclave, that we are a state. on equal footing with our sister states. And we kind of believe this foolishness, see? We don't believe that the feds have got the opportunity to give it to you 1 minute and take it back another, as you've alleged. Now, if you're correct and we're wrong, well, then we've never had much sovereignty, I guess, in this issue.
Senator, I never said you were wrong. I said you wasted your time.
Well,
I said you should have done something.
Let's talk about who wasted the time. What happened when we did elect a governor who was willing to bring the suit, and he hired an attorney general named Cole, and that attorney general hired some folks, one of which was Bruce Bethello, and Bruce Bethello came before the legislature and advocated to us, and we appropriated the money for him because he had a really good suit and thought he could win it, and it was called the Babbitt case. Who exactly was it that wasted all of our time and who dismissed the case? It wasn't me, sir. I'll guarantee
you. Charlie, he's not here.
That's right, and Charlie was disappointed at that, too. He wanted to see the answer to it because we felt we had a winner there.
Don't argue with that.
So did Bruce. Bruce testified that we had a very strong case and it was dismissed for political reasons.
My personal opinion, I think you're right.
That's why we're sitting here today. Had the Babbitt case gone the other direction, there would have been no legal authority for the federal government to pass regulations to enforce ANILCA on us. That's what we would have won. Now, unfortunately, for the same political reasons, the same governor in the same administration has now failed for 2.5 years to bring a suit to ask the question that you and I would like to have answered. Are you correct in your interpretation of the law, or is Mr. Seekins? And many people today would like us to leave it up to the mob to decide.
Well, Mr.
Just throw it out there and we'll
Senator,
let everybody decide.
Let me tell you something. I disagree with the mob because the mob elected you to the chair you sit in. Okay? And the mob's saying to you across the state of Alaska, statewide poll, 90% of us want to vote on this.
Right.
We're not telling you. You don't have to vote on it, Senator. That's not your job. All you have to do is craft the language that goes on the ballot. Now, if you don't like it, you have the same rights as I do. You can vote against it in that ballot.
My question to you, Bob, is do I have a choice do I have any choice at all on the manner in which that ballot proposition is phrased? Can I change one dot, one period, cross one T differently than what currently your take it or leave it, the governor's bill or the highway proposal is?
Sir, I believe you can change that any way you want to, as long as it conforms with the...
As long as Bruce Babbitt says it's okay.
As long as it conforms with the ANILCA.
Well, no, don't I have to get Babbitt's approval? That's what poor Joe Green had to get. He started to make changes and he found out Babbitt didn't like it.
Well, I believe those were from the first part of the bill, not the C measure. That's what I read in the paper.
Okay. I'm going to give you another analogy and ask you your opinion on this one. A lot of states down south elect sheriffs. They run for office and they get elected, don't they?
By the voters.
Yeah, by the voters. Now, the sheriff goes out and picks up a person. And this fella is alleged in that community to have done a terrible crime. So he's got him locked up in the county jail, right there next to his office. About 8 o'clock at night, a whole bunch of folks show up with a rope in their hand. They're the very same people who elected him. In fact, they got Mr. Dittman standing in front of them, and Mr. Dittman steps up and announces, 90% of your constituents demand that you do this act. Now, the act may be totally...
He's too good a Mormon. He'd never walk around the rope like that.
Okay,
I know
but the act would be totally in violation of the oath the sheriff took, wouldn't it? To turn over that prisoner to that mob.
Well, that depends on what county is the prisoner.
And what you're really saying is that whatever the mob says, we should do.
No, sir, I say whatever the voters say, we should do. I think it's called a democracy.
Well, I think they should have that opportunity myself, Bob, but I think their elected representatives should be the ones that draft it. And we've been trying to get them to draft a proposal to get out there. Like you, I want to see them have an opportunity to vote on this subject. Now, whether or not they get to vote on an amendment or whether they get to vote on an advisory vote or whether all we're trying to do is what Senator Stevens, Murkowski, and Young ask us to do is to quote, develop an Alaskan consensus. I want to see them have that opportunity. But in the process, we have to reach some meeting of the minds about what it is they're going to vote upon. And that's the greatest concern of all.
Let me touch on, you said that earlier, if I may, Senator, and I'll clarify if I can what Senator Murkowski said, because he said it to me 3 times. He will explore changes in ANILCA as long as the legislature passes a bill that is in concurrence with the governor and is sent to Washington, D.C. He said that in January. He said that in February. I know of three times he said it in print in March. Now, I submit to you, sir, July of this year, Congress is gone from acting on ANILCA. If you go get the calendar, and I have one in my file here from Senator Murkowski, you've got about 28 days left in June to make amendments to ANILCA. Now, the reason you haven't got any more time in that is because last January, last February, last March, you didn't get on with the process. You've waited till now, the legislature has. And again, you're running out of time. Now, I throw this to you, Senator. We come up with something, we go back, and it'll require public hearings in front of Senator Murkowski and Don Young committee. And they're going to open up ANILCA. I say to you, sir, that's Pandora's box. Because we may not get any more out of that. We may get less than we had going in, because that's public testimony. It's not an act hung on the end of a bill like Senator Stevens does. It's public testimony. And if I were the Sierra Club and I saw the state of Alaska had 30 days left to get some amendments done, I'd say, hot dog, here's our chance. And I think they'd be there in force. So Senator Murkowski did say he would explore changing the ANILCA. But I got a hunch if you asked him today and you talked to him a little while ago, he'd tell you you're running out of time because you used up all too much of it without doing anything.
Well, I can tell you, he was very sincere and said, get it back here as quick as you can.
Right.
And the difficulty, of course, is when you put the additional condition on it, and that is that it has to pass the legislature and be approved by
the
governor.
He said that January the 2nd.
Oh, I've always heard it. I'm trying to listen to you, Bob, and I'm trying to respond to that. And I just said that makes it very difficult because right now we have a governor who intentionally and for political reasons dismissed the Babbitt case, which threw this thing wide open. So it's real tough for us to figure out how far politically do we have to go for him to ever get his compliance. Do we have to go as far as the task force did?
Okay,
can
Senator,
we go a little less than just that
where
far?
Where would we be today, Senator Taylor, if that governor hadn't put four Republicans on that task force with him, along with three Democrats, and gone into the process of trying to find a solution, coming out with a task force proposal? If he hadn't done that and had it finished last August, Senator Murkowski would have had, Senator Stevens would have had nothing to have hung on the end of that appropriations bill. We'd have nothing. Why didn't your leadership, I'm a Republican, why didn't the Republican leadership start that a year and a half ago on their own task force and come up with their own answers to it?
Well, interestingly, Bob, we did. We started holding hearings immediately as soon as you came up with anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, what proposal did they
That's where the 500 witnesses came from that not only said no, most of them said hell no. You sat there, Bob, through the lengthy hearing in your own hometown. Of the total people that were testifying, it was you and a handful of others that said, yes, we should go along with this proposal. For 10 hours, we listened to testimony from your friends and neighbors that said, no, no way.
All I can say to you, Senator, not everybody showed up, because 90 to 95% of us today, I'm taking up a lot of your time. Senator, I respect you. 90 to 95% of us want to vote on it. We ask you, please give us an amendment to vote on to keep the feds out. I do that very sincerely.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Hello.
Yes, this is Georgiana Lincoln again.
Go right ahead, Georgiana.
Thanks. I appreciate the testimony that Mr. Penny gave. And, Mr. Chairman, I just feel that I have to correct something here, that I was a part of the testimony when we went to some of the parts of the state, but we did not go but to one rural area. We did not have the testimony, I think a sampling of the state of Alaska when people testified. I don't believe that we counted numbers to see who was testifying and who was in favor and who was against. But we did not go throughout the state of Alaska. There wasn't a good sampling of that. And Mr. Chair, I just have to say that when we talk about an equal protection clause for the constitutional amendment, we are going to have a number of constitutional amendments that are going to be on the ballot this year that is, in fact, on the Equal Protection Clause, and that we didn't have difficulty in passing, and that we didn't have difficulty in going out to the public and saying, do you support this or don't you? And I think Mr. Penny's statements are well taken, that when we have 90% of the people saying, let us vote, that's something that we should honor. I don't view our constituents as a mob, and I believe that those are the ones that elected us. Those are the ones that are saying, put it on the ballot. I'm not sure how it's going to come out. I don't know. They might say no. But let's put it to the people to vote. Those are the ones that elected us. Those are the ones that are saying, put it on the ballot and let us decide.
Well, I agree with you, Senator Lincoln. We didn't go statewide. We only went to 5 communities. That's the time limit we had prior to the second federal deadline when they were going to take us over. And on that one, they blinked in time, and we didn't have to go further at that point. Now, the House then immediately started holding hearings within 2 months after that on this very piece of legislation. But I agree with you, we didn't go to every community as we probably should have, I would have liked to have, but the testimony I was talking about was the 10 hours that took place in Soldotna. Mr. Penny sat through most of.
I was there.
And you were there. And whether my numbers are correct or not, let me just suggest this to you, that my recollection of it is that it was the overwhelming majority of those that were present. In fact, I'll never forget to my dying day the Vietnam veterans standing up and saying, you change my constitution in this fashion and prevent me and my children from being able to hunt and fish as we have in the past. And he then stood up and pointed at the American flag behind me, and he said, I will never again take up arms to defend that flag.
But then, Mr. Chairman, that's the argument you're giving. You should feel comfortable then in putting it out to the people, because you're saying that you feel that the people are going to vote against it.
Right.
Let the people...
Well, sincerely, Senator, I think that we should put an issue to the ballot, and that issue should reflect that which we are authorized as trustees to do. I cannot imagine us putting out on the ballot that certain people in the state, based on their residency, should be excluded from their right to vote. I can't imagine us putting it on the ballot that they should be excluded from their right to participate in educational opportunities. I can't imagine we should put it on the ballot that people in certain areas of the state should be denied any of their rights because of where they live. In fact, I don't think I have the authority under law to do that. That's the main reason we're having these hearings, is to find out if we do.
But we do that all the time, and I don't want to get into that now because I know that they probably...
Well, I would disagree with you there. I don't think we have done that. And in fact, the times that the legislature has done it, we get taken to the Supreme Court, and they call it things like the McDowell case, and they tell us, no, you can't do that. And, you know, I got to just give you this one last one, Bob. And in fact, Gabe and I were talking about it earlier, just briefly, and another gentleman, Paul, who I met with earlier today, who had attended the hearings. And he is a native gentleman from Nome. And he said to me, Senator Taylor, you asked a question of Byron Mallott. And I thought it was a very good question. Did you ever get an answer? I said, no, I never have. And that question was, how can we amend our Constitution to change the Equal Protection Clause and not end up in violation of the 14th Amendment of the federal Constitution? And both Charlie Cole, who was seated there next to him at the time, because the first time I asked the question was in Fairbanks, and the second time I asked the question was in Anchorage, and Paul was present in Anchorage, and he remembered the question. And I've never had an answer to it. In fact, I can't find anyone that tells me that if we amend our Constitution so as to allow discrimination based upon where a person lives, that we are not in violation of the 14th Amendment of the federal Constitution. So
Senator,
if any of your legal authorities or your group, as you research this, has some advice on that, since the administration's failed to answer, I would appreciate it if you could give us that before we try to pass a bill around here.
Well, I appreciate all the time you give me, and as I'll say to you again, I respect every single one of you in the legislature. A lot of you are my good friends, and after this is over, I think they'll be good friends again. And I respect the time you put in, and I really do. I had a big head of steam here today because I've been thinking about this a long time. Ever since Senator Stevens asked me to look into it last August, I spent a lot of hours of every day working on it just for one reason, trying to understand it. And I come to you and say you this in my conclusion. Do what you want to. Senator Taylor, keep the feds out. For my grandkids and myself, keep management a fishing game here in Alaska where it belongs. Don't put us back to where we were in the days of territory that you remember, and put us under that yoke of the federal government again. And I don't like federal law, sir. There's a lot of them I don't like. But the federal law says we must come in compliance with the federal law passed in 1980. And if it takes a constitutional amendment to do that, which I say to you is very innocuous, please give me and my family the right to vote on that.
Okay, Bob, just remember this. I didn't pass that law. I'm not the one imposing it on you. And I won't be the one that'll be funding it to take over Alaska. I wonder who will, and I wonder who did. Charles Derrick, you're up.
Hi, my name's Chuck Derrick from Fairbanks here.
Welcome.
Thank you, Senator Taylor, representing VZ in the Judiciary Committee. First of all, I'd like to make just a comment on that poll. I have problems with it because basically it said state versus federal management authority, but it should actually say state management under federal judicial review or whatever. The federal courts are going to have the final say of how we manage, even though it's quote-unquote state management. And it also comes down to an education issue on this poll. The people don't know all the facts. As far as my side of the issue, who's going to pay for the full page ads in the newspaper giving my point of view? Let's say the Outdoor Council's point of view. Is it going to be the individual hunters that donated $5, $10? Are we going to be able to compete with the native corporations that are probably going to throw millions at this? It's going to be a totally unfair vote. It's going to be, people are not going to know what they're voting on. They're not going to know the issue. I guess originally I was asked to give comments on Bill 406. I note in section 16.05.258, subsection 3, subsection B, it states that only other consumptive users will be restricted when there is this so-called shortage and the rural priority comes into effect. There's no mention as to how it will affect commercial harvests. I would like to see that addressed in the bill. Also in the bill, it gives authority to the boards to say determine harvestable portion necessary for subsistence. It also gives them authority to designate reasonable subsistence harvest opportunity and designate shortage. But again, you have to come back. If we're under the jurisdiction of ANILCA, it's going to be the federal courts again, not our boards that are going to determine all these things. Even though the boards determine these, I don't know what you would call them, interpret the wording of this bill, again, it's going to be the federal courts that have the final say. Senator Taylor said it earlier, I had it written down, but ANILCA actually dictates to us. It gives us no opportunity for a compromise. It's like saying to me that there's a federal law that says I get all the eggs in the basket and you get none. This is the way it is. Why should I compromise with anybody? I've got all the eggs. I don't need to compromise. I'm going to hold my ground. I'm going to let the federal government take over because they're the ones that are going to see that I get all the eggs. Another thing is that the rural priority, we're not just talking fish and game. We're talking all renewable natural resources in the state. And you keep that in mind. I would like to see the state wait until the Legislative Council's suit against the Interior Department gets settled either way. If it gets settled that ANILCA, this federal government, does not have the right to take over subsistence management in the state, then we as a state can sit down without that over our heads and we can actually do some compromising between the two sides. They're so polarized now, you know, and it's been that way ever since this issue has been under discussion in this state. Anilka is the one that's stopping the compromise. And until we get that threat of federal management takeover off our backs, then we can actually sit down and talk. And Senator Lincoln, you espouse the merits of the administration and how well they're looking after the state. Not only did they drop the Babbitt suit, but also the administration forced private citizens to go out and document all our RS-2477 trails in order that the state could actually retain right of access across these trails before our little moratorium was up and we lose that right. That was Governor Knowles again. I thank you.
Chuck, thank you very much. I really appreciate you coming in. Mary Bishop, you're up. And then John Binkley. We're kind of over time, but you've been very patient, and I'm going to sit here until we go through the last one.
I had Mary Bishop, Fairbanks, Alaska, representing myself only. I had intended to testify, but I think there should be a few points made. The task force proposal is not a compromise. I think it's all one-sided. It's just simply not a compromise. Secondly, this is, I don't like to say this, but this is a native, non-native issue. We all wish it was rural, non-rural, but speak realistically. It is a native, non-native issue. Babbitt said as much. He said the reason he's interfering in this is because of his trust responsibilities to Alaska Natives. And it never would have been an issue had it not been brought forth first as a native-only issue, and then it just got a little sidewise there to rural, non-rural, but it is, unfortunately, a native, non-native issue. And while we're all speaking of our children and our grandchildren and how we're all doing this and that for our children and our grandchildren, the thing that pushes me so hard is what I see happening in other parts of the world where ethnic groups are tearing each other apart, whether it be Ireland or Africa or Czechoslovakia or Russia or wherever it is. Governments have got to treat people equally. They cannot start saying, you get this because you're this religion or you're that race or you're this ethnic group. Governments have got to treat people equally. And that's what pushes me. I'd like to repeat what Chuck Derrick said. We've got to remember that this affects all renewable, the federal bill affects all renewable resources, not just fish and game. It affects waters, timber, berries, whatever is a renewable resource. And I would really think the mining industry should look very hard at this and remember it, because if there's any renewable resource that's really being affected in the lower 48 by these kinds of preferences, it's water rights. And when we have to stop certain types of mining development or any other kind of development because it might have some type of influence, negative influence on subsistence use, you're gonna feel it. And believe me, the court cases are gonna come to that, because all of this is gonna go to the courts constantly. And Alaska Legal Services will see to it that it does. And it'll be other groups besides Alaska Legal Services. I think I would like to, because I've been so involved in this for 20 years, I'd like to go over a little bit of the history. The initial state bill, HB 960, was passed in 1978. It gave a state preference for subsistence use for all Alaskans. It did not include a rural preference or priority. Specifically did not include rural. But when it went to the Congress in 1980, there was a group of advocates that said, look, the state must want this. They passed it in state law, but change it a little bit, add the word rural, and make it apply to all renewable resources, not just fish and game. And that happened. But there still was no federal, there still was no state law and no state regulations that did this. And the boards of fish and game did not want to do it. Finally, because the Department of Interior kept saying they had to, finally Senator Stevens came to a board meeting, the Joint Boards of Fish and Game. I was there at that meeting. I'd been attending fish and game meetings for a few years by that time. I can remember the tension and the anguish of those men, 14 of them I believe it was, as they sat there trying to figure out whether they would comply with this law. They did not want to, but they were being told they had to by representatives of the federal government. Finally, they did agree to, and it was very moving testimony that they gave. Among the things they said was, We have been doing our best over the past many years trying to give some kind of a leg up to people who lived in rural Alaska. We provided these places where you can't fly in. We made seasons longer in the rural areas. But we never said that the people in this area could go there and the people in this area could not go there. That's the difference. We're drawing circles now around people and saying what they can do and what they can't do. That was never done. It was never done until they were forced to do it in 1982. But they didn't hardly do it at all, even then. It was really not implemented. It was rarely implemented. But the court cases were beginning to trip in to force them to do it. Finally, in 1989, one of the most important court cases passed. Besides McDowell, there was another one called the Bobby case. And in that one, which to me is just the example of what this law can do. In the Bobby case, Lime Village residents had a 6-month moose and an 8-month caribou season. Alaska Legal Services took it to court. Judge Holland came back with his decision, which said, need is not the standard. Whether or not there's alternative resources, other things for people to eat, is not the standard for judicial review. The standard for our review is whether or not there's customary and traditional use, and when that customary and traditional use occurs. And it's obvious that in Lime Village, opportunistic hunting occurs year-round. So he demanded that the boards of fish and game go back and devise regulations that would meet his approval. Meet his approval. So they did, and his approval was virtually year-round hunting of moose and caribou for Lion Village residents. That is what we have with Anilka. It has nothing to do with need. It has nothing to do with shortage. What is demanded is that the boards of fish and game give customary and traditional use to the rural residents. And if there's nothing left for anybody else, too bad. But they have to give that first. And Judge Holland said year-round hunting, opportunistic year-round hunting, was what was customary and traditional. So that's the kind of thing we have to look forward to. It's not something that I consider to be innocuous, but it won't occur right away. It will occur in little pieces as they go to the court to demand compliance with Anilka. It won't happen all at once. Just little by little by little, and that's what we're leading ourselves into up to when we have a law like Anilka, which, by the way, the most important thing, and it's still protected in the task force compromise, is the effort to have Title VIII viewed by the courts as Indian law. Don't tell me this isn't a racial issue or a native versus non-native issue. There is even a new effort going on, which I should give you the papers about, to have ANILCA Title VIII ruled as Indian law. What is the standard for Indian law, a law that is judged to be Indian legislation? It is that anything that's vague in that law, the courts must rule in favor of the tribe or Indian group. There is probably no law greater in vagueness than ANILCA. What does customary and traditional mean? What does rural mean? What does customary trade mean? All this stuff is vague, and we're leaving ourselves open. It's not going to be innocuous. It's going to be one lawsuit after another, and it's not just in times of shortage. Thank you.
Mary, where does this times of shortage stuff come from? Am I missing something in reading
it? It's been around since the initial lobbying for it in Congress. Congress was sold on this on the basis that it applied only in times of shortage. I can remember myself and other people meeting with Congressman Young and saying, and on ours, you know, we're saying it's not just in times of shortage, it's all the time. And he was convinced it was times of shortage. He sat down, he says, I'll find it for you in the language.
Everybody seems to be convinced of this. I mean, I hear it on the news, I hear it on comments by people and the rest of it.
That's...
Mary Nordale is sitting here shaking her head no. She's a fine attorney in whom I have the highest regard. Ralph Seekins has done extensive research on it. He's shaking his head no. And I have challenged people now for about 5 years. Will you please, if you believe in this myth so greatly, bring your mythological god to my table and let me see him? I've not seen the words yet, and I've read the thing about 4 times. But when they get on the radio, when they get on the TV, everybody wants to talk about times of shortage. This thing has nothing to do with times of shortage, does it, Mary?
No, not a thing. And even AFN attorneys, you know, in their papers say it has nothing to do with times of shortage.
I can't find it either.
This is another reason why it's so dangerous to put it before, in a sense, dangerous to put it before the public. Because the public has been taught for 20 years that it's in times of shortage, and they truly believe it.
I know they do.
And the people in the villages believe it's only in times of shortage. But the attorneys know differently.
You bet they do.
They know differently.
I wonder how many hundreds of thousands of dollars have been spent on push polls to tell the people of Alaska that there's times of shortage, and or the push poll that we're going to gain state management by doing this.
For people who
I'd love to know those numbers.
For little people in remote communities where there is such need. But
that's
meanwhile,
right.
Sitka and Wrangell have got it.
Well, Wrangell's a little town anymore. We're smaller, you know, than Kotzebue.
Yeah,
we're smaller than Bethel.
You got it.
And with the help of people like Knowles and Clinton, I'll guarantee you we're getting a lot smaller. But now I find people that advocate that these are bad things to have happen to resource industries are supporting them.
I forgot. You have the subsistence priority, don't you?
Yes, I do. I am a subsistence qualified person.
That's right.
Yeah. Thank you, Mary. Appreciate you coming in and tell Dick hi. Johnny, you're up.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
It's always good to see you, Senator.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to have you come to our Bear City and visit us. We appreciate that. Other members of the committee who may be on teleconference and Representative Veazey, thank you once again for the opportunity to testify. I'll make my statements fairly brief.
I just want the record to reflect Senator Halford had also joined us some time ago, and I failed to mention that.
Mentioned my welcome to Senator Halford as well. For the record, my name is John Binkley, and I reside at 5325 Chena Small Tracks Road here in Fairbanks. Just to preface my comments, I have the utmost respect for people like Mary Bishop, who have followed this issue over so many years and are so much more knowledgeable than I on the details of it, what's transpired, the history of it, all that's gone on. And I don't profess to be more knowledgeable about people about this issue than people who have spent the time on it, including the committee members who are here and those in the legislature presently who have worked very diligently on this over the last several years. The premise of my comments really are twofold. One, it's my humble belief that prior to the McDowell decision by the State of Alaska Supreme Court, that we had within the state of Alaska a workable and acceptable management scheme to the vast majority of Alaskans. And I think there were some problems, but I think the boards of fish and game were doing their best and were working through those problems as time went on. I think that had we passed a constitutional amendment subsequent to that state Supreme Court decision, that a lot of the acrimony and difficult stresses that have been put on relationships between different areas and different peoples in Alaska would not have come to bear. And I think that Alaskans would have been satisfied with the management system that would have been in place. I think that, as Mr. Penny put it earlier, that if this measure is allowed to be voted on by the people of the state of Alaska, I believe that it will pass, and I believe that subsequent to that, that we will get back to a management scheme that will be acceptable to Alaskans. I think Mary Bishop, in her testimony, was very correct that over time there will be a lot of decisions at various levels in the court system that will ultimately shape a lot of the management scheme that we have, but I think that our chances of having that management under state control are far better in reflecting a system that will be better for the people of the state of Alaska and the management of our resources here in the state. And that really is the basis of my testimony today, and I don't want to take up any of your time and don't really want to debate the issue. I know most people are kind of set in terms of where they are in this issue, but this really is my only opportunity as a citizen like others to give you my opinion on the issue.
John, I'm assuming as you allow the vote, all the heavy money gets thrown at it and the bumper stickers and it passes. And you agree apparently with Murray that then the courts are going to have to refine and define where all those nuances go in the law.
I think inevitably, whichever way it happens, there will be a tremendous amount of litigation and a lot of, even if we don't pass a constitutional amendment and the state management comes in, there will be a tremendous amount of lawsuits right. that will evolve as a result of that that will dictate what it is, even if we change ANILCA.
Sure. I think I agree with you completely on that. I think that is the scenario that we're headed down the road towards were that to occur. I think the only hope I have of avoiding that scenario is should the legislature prevail on its suit and ANILCA be thrown out, all of that tale of tears that you're looking at out there, and I agree with you, that trail of tears is out there, no matter which way we go. But if the legislature suit prevails, every bit of that disappears. Why shouldn't we be throwing every dime we have, every public pressure thing we have in favor of that suit to make certain that this whole thing disappears and we get true state management, sole state management back?
I guess that presumes that we prevail in that suit.
Whether we prevail or not, wouldn't you want to try?
I think that Mr. Penny's observation that we've had 18 years to go down that road and we haven't, not as individuals in the state, other than the legislatures or the administrations, I believe, under Governor Hickel's tenure, did head down that road. But we haven't successfully got to that point
and
had it litigated and a final judgment made. But even beyond that, I think that resources.
You see, that,
as well.
That would happen in any suit anyhow, because the suit is going to be based on one of equal protection, violation of the Constitution. What it's going to be is both a state suit and a federal one that moves on up. Assuming we pass the law and the amendment passed and Bob's happy that we're now managing for the feds these resources, as that litigation goes forward, what are they going to find? Well, I'll be darned. They find out the original law was unconstitutional. Guess what? The whole thing gets thrown out. Sua sponte, on the moment, she all becomes a wash at that point.
But don't you,
you don't need, in the interim,
maybe that's 5 years down the road, maybe it's 2 years, I don't know how long that would take, but wouldn't it be a prudent course for us to retain that state management in the meantime, even if it is under...
Well, see, some of us fought the provision in 1990, and that's the only reason you have a semblance of state management today on fish.
But
had we
all
rolled over in 1990, you'd now have federal management of both fish and game, and that would be on not only federal land, but all state lands and state waters. Had we rolled over in 90 and voted for the amendment offered to us by Governor Cooper.
Well, I might disagree with you on that, but I think that whatever we've done in the past, that's been done. You know, our only opportunity is to change what's in front of us
right. And
to act on what's in front of us. And to me, the prudent course is to allow the people an opportunity to vote to try and stop the management of our resources by the federal government, the direct management, and to allow that process that the legislature has now initiated to work its way through the court system.
Sure. Senator Alford had a question.
Yeah, John, how do you understand federal management as it's applied in the NILC? I think the definition of federal management is one of the big lies driving polls, attitudes, and ideas in this area. What do you call federal management? And where do you find it in the bill?
I think that's a fair question, and one that I haven't studied very closely. I guess I have a concept of what it is, but I don't have a real good working knowledge of how it would actually take place or be implemented. I mean, my understanding is that we would have those decisions that are now made, for example, by our Board of Fisheries, made by another board that is a federally appointed. And
do you mean commercial fishing seasons, sport fishing seasons, the seasons that are now set, or do you, I mean, what would it apply to?
Well, I think, you know, my understanding, again, and I'm not as well read or studied on the issue as all of you are here, but my understanding is that under the federal scheme, and I suppose there would be regulations that would be written by the Department of Interior that would lay out how the management scheme would work. Their only guideline currently being under ANILCA to manage for a rural preference. Now I would assume that beyond that they would enact some sort of regulation that would allow for other uses, but I don't know that for certainty. And that they would have some scheme for...
The way most people read the Federal Act, and the plain words of the Federal Act, say that they would have the authority to manage the resource for subsistence purposes only. They would never, under the Act, unless it is amended, have the authority to provide a sport fish opener, a commercial fish opener. They would have the authority to protect subsistence uses. Mm-hmm. And if there were a competing use, and they felt that it was endangering the availability of the resource for subsistence use, mm-hmm. then they would have to go to a federal judge and enjoin a competing opening, but they would never have management of anything but subsistence harvest, even under the worst application of the way the federal law is right now. And I think that's a real misunderstanding that's out there in the whole spectrum of things.
But, Rick, would that preclude them from managing for those other uses as well?
Yes, it would, unless they can get a major change in federal law. I think one of the things that's driving the public opinion on this debate is, do you want the feds to take over management of fish and game? Mm-hmm. There is no provision in anybody's wildest extension of anything in ANILCA that allows them to, quote, take over management of fish and game. The provisions apply only to the management of subsistence. And
well,
there are threads that they can pull if the resource is not available. I'm not saying that they can't ever pull a thread, but if the state system provides enough resource to meet the subsistence needs, then the state is still in charge, even with the feds managing the subsistence harvest. And that's what you have with the dual regulations in game and have had for the last 7 years. Mm-hmm. Essentially, you've got two books, two sets of regulations. And if you notice, the federal regulations only apply to somebody that's qualified under their definition as a subsistence user on mm-hmm. federal land. Mm-hmm. So,
and I don't know. I mean, just from what I read in the press, I know that Secretary Babbitt has requested $9 million or some such number to manage the fisheries side, and I don't know what depth he's talking about in that, or what he feels, or the federal government feels, to what extent that they have the authority to kind of pull in those other uses.
Active advocate of a point of view, and I think mm-hmm. it's important that people understand what is at risk. I don't like any federal management of anything,
mm-hmm.
so don't get me wrong, but I think the threat and the reality are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
Just a point.
Well, and my concern,
if you can find anything in the law that says I'm wrong, I'd be glad.
Yeah.
That's not the way.
And I don't know. And as Senator Taylor and I spoke about earlier, I'm sure there would be a tremendous amount of litigation that would go to those sorts of questions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to what extent can the federal government manage those resources? But an overlying concern that I have in this whole management by the federal government of the fish and game resources is the effect that has on the development of our other natural resources in the state of Alaska. And it really does truly concern me when we look at developing some of our other resources, whether they be timber or mining or oil and gas, the influence that those decisions that the fish and game involved in us making decisions on the development of those other resources play into it, and who the managers of those resources are, and who their constituencies are when they come and testify and elaborate on the impacts to the fish and the game when we want to develop other resources. And that truly is a concern of mine, that when you have those federal managers of the fish and game resource, that they have an impact, and in my opinion, a negative impact, on how we can develop those other resources, natural resources that we have in the state that are important that we're able to develop in order to grow.
If that development goes to the degree of damaging subsistence resources after it has eliminated commercial access and recreational access to the same resources, and they may be able to get somewhere, but that's a level of damage that I'm not sure the people of Alaska would tolerate to those resources anyway. So I'm not sure you get to that worry. But
to me, it's such a gamble that it's not worth the risk.
Another question, just for, because you're actively involved in. What do you think, just in terms of a perception, what do you think of the McDowell decision? What do you think they said in simple two sentences? Because I think there's a lot of misconceptions about what they said also.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm not as active as I probably should be in this issue, because I think it's a very, very important issue for the state of Alaska. And, of course, I'm just going along trying to make a living every day and keep up with the kids and whatnot. But
I'd rather be dressed as you are than I am.
Yeah. Well, I'm enjoying myself, I tell you that. But as I recall, wasn't it a split decision? Wasn't it like 3-2 as far as the decision went? And, you know, I'm trying to think back to the...
I think there's a perception in the public that the Supreme Court attacked subsistence.
No.
But it was 4-1, not 3-2. It was a split decision. Rabinowitz dissented. But the Supreme Court didn't attack subsistence. The majority of the court actually said, we find subsistence important enough that it requires close scrutiny with regard to discrimination. The minority opinion by Rabinowitz said, no, it's not important enough to require close scrutiny, and therefore, this level of discrimination is okay. And what the standards they're using in all this mm-hmm. stuff, and I'm not a lawyer either, but basically, the higher the level of right, the higher the level of scrutiny for any discrimination. And the one thing that Alaskans, I think, agree on is that subsistence is a fundamental human right.
Mm-hmm.
And if it is, then how you treat it And people say discrimination is all wrong. Well, we allow discrimination for all kinds of things. It's not that there is no such thing as discrimination. It's you can't do it based on sex, religion, race, and a whole bunch of other things. We do it based on need. We do it based on lots of other things. And all the Supreme Court said was that if you're going to discriminate, it has to be the minimum necessary to meet the purposes you're trying to protect. Now, I think we in the state can actually do that and meet what their original goals were without going back and doing violence to a lot of the principles in the Constitution. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we ever get to the table at the same time. I think we might this fall if people give up on a constitutional amendment and the commercial fishing industry, which covers both sides of this equation, comes back to the table because, they didn't really get upset when we lost subsistence game management. Mm-hmm. And we've had a dual system that's been inefficient, it's been duplicative, it's been wasteful, but we've all kind of muddled through it. When it got to fish, all of a sudden the same people that didn't care had fit, and now we're back into the equation. But if we're at a point where there isn't a constitutional amendment available, and the Stevens amendments are going to run out, which add new federal mandates as well as fixing a couple of old ones, but when those amendments are going to run out, everybody comes to the table knowing that they have to fix it and they can't change the Constitution to do it. I think you'll see a real fix that works.
It's a big gamble.
Big gamble.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much.
Thank you for coming out. Was there anyone else in the room that wanted to testify?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Senator Ward.
Yes, thank you. I was just wondering if John is still there. I had one question.
Go ahead.
You went home. Go ahead, Jerry.
It's an easy one. Back when Governor Hickel tried to find, when he formed a task force to go through and find a solution to the subsistence question.
Take care, Bob.
When it came down to the final breakdown, it was because of the bartering, and that's where it fell apart. And that was the point it fell apart at. But really, the question is, and I think it's a little bit coming off of what Senator Halpert was going to, John, you said you only know what you've read in the paper, which I can understand. That's actually what all of us know somewhat, and whoever can buy the most ads and owns the most barrels of ink seems to control at least what we know from the paper. But tell me, if in fact we put a constitutional amendment on the ballot and it failed, what would you think that we should do at that point?
Well, I don't know, Jerry. Senator Ward. And I'm sorry, I missed a part. I was interrupted here, and I missed a part of your initial question. But, I guess I don't have an answer to that. I guess with our fallback would be to try and get other amendments to ANILCA. I don't know.
Litigation.
Well, if in fact,
at least we've done everything we can to attempt to make the changes.
Well, I think that if in fact we put it on the ballot and it fails, we are going to be at House Bill 406. So we should be commenting on House Bill 406 at this time instead of just carrying forth with the rhetoric that you and I enjoy every day from the media and the paid media.
Well, I apologize for maybe not being more specific in my testimony, and I apologize for that.
No, I don't. Believe me, it's a big bill, and I've read it more than anybody else probably, or most people that are listening, and it's a long ways from being done, but it's also a reasonable attempt to try to address the problem. And if we put Governor Knowles' position on, Bruce Babbitt's position on the ballot, and it fails, we will be back at House Bill 406 anyway. And so maybe that's where we ought to be to begin with.
Okay, Jerry, anything further?
No, we're still here. We just thank you. It's been a very good meeting.
We've gone through all the witnesses up here, and though we didn't ever achieve a quorum, I kept hoping. We had lots of participation, though, from other members. We'll just call this a work session. And make certain that the transcript is done up so that we have that within the record. And again, I want to thank everyone for coming. I really appreciate the participation, and we are adjourned.
Good to see you, John.
Good to see you too, Ron.
Mary?
Senator, I'm sorry.
Would
you like a copy of it?
Yes, please. No, not for right now. No, okay. Just, I'll get it when you show it back.
Great. Good night.